Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. Yes, it is Chicken Palooza. Tis the season. I was pumping up the other day. I wasn't hungry when I went in. I did get some salted cashews. They were delicious. But it is Chicken Palooza time. Make sure you're boxing that up, taking care of our friends at Royal Farms. Luke, my friends at Wise Markets actually made the wise choice and got me like a thermal. I can go hot or cold. Right now it's just cold in here because it's kind of hot out. And I've gone with the Billy Graham back from the Orient look here. And you're with the I've been back from Wildwood for a week and the All-Star game's over. And you said something to me. I don't want to green room you on this, but you said something before we came on. Like, we can talk about the Orioles because people really want to talk about the Ravens right now. And I'm like, okay, you know, I was kind of hoping we would like go through a little bit of something, 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 but I'm not disagreeing with you. This is sort of that weird little underbelly of a week or two or three, and I know the Olympics are trying to get in there, and hell, the NBA is still playing, right? And by the way, go Bucks. That was a great interview with that kid about ego, and we could talk about that all day too. But football, right? I mean, like, you're ready to go. You got your SPF, right? Your fingers are in tweeting position right now. Like, it's go time if you're John Harbaugh next week.
Yeah, and I think from a fan standpoint, not that the Orioles, I mean, they're not that terribly relevant anyway, but knowing that training camp's approaching, it's still going to be there on a nightly basis. You're still waiting to see if Adley Rutschman is called up in September, when Jamie Jones might be called up to play second base. You know, I mean, Cedric Mullins continues to be a great story. We'll see what happens with Trey Mancini. We'll see what happens with the trade deadline. But I think all of that being said, you can't help but take notice last week when training camp passes for fans are handed out, I guess not sold out because they're not for sale, but handed out in a matter of minutes. An hour or so. And even the passes that they're doing for the stadium practice on July 31st, they go in a very quick manner. So it's a little reminder, one, that we're talking about fans being able to take part post-pandemic, or at least on the tail end of the pandemic, let's say. And just the overall excitement level for a football team that 2 years ago won 14 games and last year won 11 games. And there's a lot of excitement, as there
suddenly
should be.
There is hope. There is hope in the land, right?
Exactly, exactly. So, you know, I mean, the Orioles will continue to play out the rest of the season, and we'll still talk about that and give that, you know, whatever deserved time that is. But yeah, people are excited about the Ravens, and they should be. And we're finally at that point now where, you know, we've gotten through OTAs, we've gotten through mandatory minicamp. The players, coaches, executives kind of get their downtime. And, you know, you get that dead period, which is why I go to Wildwood when I do in early July, for example. But you come back and you're starting to count down now to training camp, and knowing that every practice isn't life or death or anything like that, other than just catastrophic injuries that you want to avoid. But it's another step getting closer to kicking off September 13th in Las Vegas, and just the excitement, the optimism, the, let's face it, the expectations. As I noted at BaltimorePositive.com last week, you kind of ponder this Ravens season. What would constitute a successful, gratifying season that doesn't include winning the Super Bowl? It's kind of tough, right?
Dude, I made a call last week. I figured out where Radio Row is going to be in L.A. All right. I mean, it's not time to get a flight yet, but it's time to be thinking about how we're going to encamp ourselves in Los Angeles, the city of the stars, Luke Jones, a little Hollywood up on the hill, the whole deal. And how are you going to touch a play? Like, if I come down there on the 31st, what happens?
Well, at this point in time, from what I understand, now the Ravens have not made any of their plans official yet. From what I understand, there's going to be a meeting. And there will be a meeting at some point this week, probably via Zoom, just, you know, for the ease and convenience of it. But they'll lay out how it's going to look. But from what I understand, and a lot of this is going with what I've heard from a league standpoint with being a member of the PFWA, is there will be some in-person access in terms of probably podium, which if anyone's watched the videos, you know, at the team website or Baltimore Positive, knowing that they're outside, right outside the facility, right off the practice field, they'll have some podium, they'll have in-person access in that way. We've never had locker room access, at least since I've been covering the team. We've never had locker room access during training camp anyway. from a space and logistics standpoint, because you have
The old days we did in Westminster.
Yeah, I understand that.
Remember, like, if you were undrafted, if you were guy 50 through 95 early on, your locker was down the hallway into the women's room. You had a little cage in the corner, and I'll never forget finding Priest Holmes there. You know, it's the first time I ever talked to Priest Holmes was like there. And I was like, oh, he's kind of tiny. And you know, next thing you know, he becomes Priest Holmes. But yeah, it's been that long. That's how far back my training camp thoughts go. It was, I saw Priest Holmes there. So it was not recent.
Right, right. So we're moving toward normalcy. I know that the league, the union, the PFWA continue to have dialogue as far as if locker room access will be any semblance of a reality during the regular season. And I've heard that that's on the table, that it's not something that they're going to say no necessarily. At the same time, I've kind of said all along, I think you're going to see the league. And you and I have talked about this in terms of media access in general.
Oh,
you
know, Dick Cass and I are going to talk about this.
Right, right. But I'm just saying, in those terms, I'm not expecting locker room access necessarily, but I'm not going to say we won't have that either. So the good news is, though, for fans listening and saying, well, I don't really care necessarily about the details of that, but it will mean better access. It should mean more information, more access, better information. And, you know, I think it's one of those things, and you and I have touched on it on various points. I mean, I remember the Mets had the dugout spat earlier this year, and, you know, they were saying there was a rat in the tunnel. No, a couple players, there was a dispute. But when you don't have media in the locker room or in the clubhouse, you know, and it's not a quote that you're going to get, but it's that guy in the corner that's talking to the reporter that he trusts and says, yeah, you know, this is kind of what happened. So you get an idea. You know, you don't have those conversations during COVID, and understandably so. I'm not saying that they didn't have to close the locker room.
This is the point where the plague can become a real way to screw anybody they want.
Yeah. And just being able to control the message, And I mean, will there be limited locker room access? Who will have access to that? I mean, it's tricky in that way. But the good news is we are moving in a positive direction in that way. There will be in-person access. That's, you know, we're not just going to be being on Zooms the entire year, although I'm assuming that's going to continue to be part of the pie, so to speak, in terms of access. But it's going to be fun. And we're going to be back out there. And I know the Ravens are going to be able to host, I think, up to 1,000 fans. I think it depends. They sell parking passes, and it's how many fans can pile into a car to go to watch practice that day. So from what I understand there, they can host up to 1,000 fans per open practice in Owings Mills, as far as the passes they've already distributed via their team website. And they'll have a sizable crowd there for the stadium practice. So it's going to be fun in that way. I mean, I can tell you, there have been previous times, and even in the spring when they're practicing in OTAs and in mini camp, they don't have fans there at that point. And I can just tell you, it's a very sterile, weird, almost surreal kind of feel to it. And certainly during training camp, not having that was very weird last year. Never mind the fact we're all wearing masks and everything. But you know, the idea that we're going to be moving to a much more normal setting. It's not 100% normal. I know they're not going to be able to do autographs and you know, fans up close to players necessarily, but the fact that they can be there, the fact that they can have a sizable crowd there, the fact that they'll have 30, 40,000, whatever they end up having for the stadium practice. So on July 31st, that's fun. You know, and it's just a reminder that we are moving in a good direction in that way. And it'll be a reminder of how much we've missed those things. And, you know, from a media standpoint, having better access and hopefully in the process of that, being able to tell better stories about some of these guys like J.K. Dobbins, who I've never met him in person. I've never shook J.K. Dobbins' hand. And it's strange to think that, you know, Calais Campbell, another guy that have now been around for a minute.
Patrick Queen, same thing.
Yeah, I mean, guys that you've talked to via Zoom, but, you know, that's not the same as laying eyes on them in person and saying hello, and maybe not handshakes just yet, but at the very least being able to lay eyes and make eye contact and kind of meet these people as human beings as well.
Luke Jones is here. He is Baltimore Luke. Add on Twitter and Facebook. And, of course, Luke at WNST.net. Orioles, I was watching them. I was going to go to wrestling for – I'll keep wrestling for the end to keep the audience, because anybody that wants to hear about Paul Orndorff. I would just say this on the Oriole thing. I watched pieces of Orioles-Royals over the weekend. But for me, and I'm going to talk probably more about this at length on the recon with Don later on this week as I get ready for a trip. My anniversary's this week, 18 years ago. So like all of that, then we get training camp. Then I'm doing this crab cake tour. And I mean, the crab cake tour is, Luke, it's on like Donkey Kong. That's all I'm going to say, man. I've been Google mapping. I've been sticking pins down. I've been looking at what cake looks like a cake that I'm going to enjoy. I'm talking about places that I, you know, Dan Rogerson and I are going to fly fish. I was on the phone with the people out in Deep Creek Lake. I found so many places in Deep Creek Lake. I feel like I need to stay longer. But the good news is it's only 2 hours and 45 minutes away. I can go back. So this is a little bit of an exploratory thing, you know, going on. But the baseball thing, I put the game on, and the Royals and the Orioles were on. I'm like, you know, I thought about our moment out there, and it wasn't a great moment. I mean, you and I got on a plane, went out there, watched the Orioles get their ass kicked a couple of nights. Dan Duquette said some smarmy stuff to me. I gave Buck a pass, quite frankly, because like I could have been a guy asking questions to Buck in the post game, and I'm like, Buck looks a little depressed. He doesn't need me. He doesn't need to look up and see me asking a question. And I feel like, you know, they squeezed out the baseball. They squeezed out the football, right? I mean, they got the champagne, they got Mahomes, they got all that going on. And I think about sort of the meeting of these two cities, Baltimore and Kansas City, how many years Brian McCray and I and Jeff Montgomery and I would just talk about how dreadful it was in both places. Then all of a sudden, it was like Toto out of Kansas and Dorothy, you know, like a dream, like the house fell and the Royals had a parade. And it's like it never happened. You know, I said, so I was out visiting with a friend of mine the other day and he wanted to talk baseball with me. I mean, I haven't been out much. So when I'm out, especially without a mask, people talk to me and they really want to engage me and keep me longer than I feel like I have time for. But he was like talking to me about baseball. And about the All-Star game, Mancini, and, you know, they're going to trade Mullins and value. Like, it was the conversation you and I have on the radio. And I thought to myself, like, you know, if this is all we got at this point, right? But that thing was a beautiful thing, that Royals-Orioles thing. And to see it sort of like go poof. And the thing I said to my pal is, the real issue for the Orioles for me is how they didn't create anything out of it, the good times. They had these 5 years. I don't see sponsors that have stayed. I don't see season ticket holders that have stayed. I don't see fans that have stayed. I just see people showing up and picking up a Hawaiian shirt or a bobblehead. And Kansas City was sort of that same thing that you and I were there. You have vivid memories of like how much George Brett stuff was like out at that point, right? And how everybody came out in powder blue and was all there. And then the residual is, well, the next year they sell out. And the residual is they can't sign everybody. Then they can't sign anybody. And then they bring a guy in from the bullpen in the middle of the day on Sunday. I'm like, oh, he's still there. Look at that. And it feels like it happened very, very quickly that it just went poof for these two small market teams that we always talk about. What's it take to build and rebuild? And how bad do you have to be? And the NFL doesn't have to be that bad. And I mean, hell, the Wizards are hiring Wes Unseld's kid to try to figure it out. Once you get bad, I don't know how you get good. But watching that over the weekend, it kind of broke my heart for how much fun we were having a couple of years ago, because it was fun.
Yeah, and I think it really does speak to that conversation that you and I, frankly, have not necessarily debated or fought over, but we've just pondered a little bit in terms of what is the value of reaching the pinnacle in the way that Kansas City did in 2015, you know, the year after they beat the Orioles in the ALCS. But then it's very fleeting, and you kind of sooner rather than later settle back into that malaise, that, you know, period of not being terribly relevant. You know, I mean, look, okay, the Royals
What's left of it is there's 12,000 people in the ballpark. A bunch of people have a bunch of Royal stuff in their closet that they bought.
Right.
And we never had that with the Ravens, right? Like, Ravens won in 2000, and then it is – people just kept coming. And that's unusual. And I think with the Orioles in 92, 93, like I felt very, very spoiled when I built this thing back in the 90s that like there were always going to be 3 million people here, never seeing how bad this guy would completely F it up and that there would be a Washington team and there would be shootings outside the third base gate on a night when I'm supposed to go to the game. And I'll get to that on the recon if you don't want to touch it. But I don't know, it's kind of heartbreaking for me for Kansas City because when I was there and they were all dancing, you remember, I mean, it wasn't a whole lot of fun for us, but it was like, it was something to see that city in that way, in that stadium, that night, the way you and I witnessed it. And, you know, to see that it didn't leave behind, I guess it left behind something. There's kids in Kansas City playing baseball instead of lacrosse or soccer or whatever, I guess. But it certainly didn't feel that way over the weekend. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, but the point I was trying to make is we always talk about that gratification that you get, that you hope for, that you think about, that Red Sox fans thought of for 86 years, that Cubs fans thought of for over 100 years, that where you reach the pinnacle. But how valuable is that? How much is that worth if there isn't some semblance of sustainability in the prosperity after that? And look, I don't mean winning 3 championships in a row. I don't mean becoming the New York Yankees. You said it with the Ravens. If the Ravens had won in 2000 in the way they did, and then they became the Orioles of the early 2000s immediately after that. They had the cap purge right away, right? You know, they had to blow up the team.
The Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Tampa Bay Buccaneers won, and it was all good. And I remember going down there, dude, there weren't 5,000 Tampa Bay Buc fans there that day when Flacco threw those 6. Like, it was unbelievable. I've never been to an NFL game pre-plague where there have been less people of the home team than in Tampa, and they won. So there's a prime example. And in Detroit, they can never win, and all they do is sell tickets. So there really is a mindset about it.
There is, and there's a culture. I think it reflects a city from a fan base standpoint, not the city itself, because there's so many variables involved in all these different markets. But that's where I go back to the mindset of making sure you enjoy the journey. Look, I can't sit here with some guarantee and saying the Ravens will definitely win a Super Bowl with Lamar Jackson as their head coach or as their quarterback, or John Harbaugh will definitely win another Super Bowl as their head coach, because we just don't know. It's really tough to do, first of all. It's incredibly difficult to do. Ask Dan Marino, ask Dan Fouts, you know, talk Hall of Fame quarterbacks who never won a Super Bowl. But I guess the point, and this kind of lends itself well to what you were mentioning with Kansas City. And I mean, the Royals aren't as bad as the Orioles right now, but they're still bad. You know, they're still not a contender anymore and haven't been for a couple of years. And you just wonder, yes, you savor that championship and you love the parade and you buy the gear and you buy the DVD or the Blu-ray and you watch that. And the same way you and I have watched the Ravens playoff games from 2000 on the bus going to New England or Pittsburgh or wherever, how many years.
Jay Lou is still running and Soakley still catches that ball.
But I still wonder how much value that has if the franchise then completely loses its way and shows no ability to get back on track, in as opposed to, not saying that you never win a championship, but you're a team that year in and year out, and you look at the Ravens for the better part of 2 decades now, they have been a contender year in and year out. There have only been a couple years, and even those years, you think about it, 2002, 7-9, that they were the youngest team in the league, all of that. They were in wild card contention until the very end of the season. 2005, the wheels went off, but going into the year, there were high expectations. Same thing with 2007. 2015, expectations were really high coming off of a divisional round. Now, it didn't work out that way. My point is the Ravens have been able to legitimately sell hope every single year for the last 20 years, other than one or two of those years. And 02 was probably one of them, just knowing that the roster had changed so much. That, to me, is where you build culture and build a fan base and build the kind of loyalty and just you have something that people want to rally around and invest in terms of season tickets, in terms of merchandise, in terms of just giving it a lot of oxygen in your life. I mean, some of my best friends from high school that I still talk to today with the text chain on my phone right now, we talk a lot about the Ravens over the course of a year. The Orioles, not a whole lot. And that's just, And some of that might be football as opposed to baseball. And we know the NFL's king, but a lot of that is over the course of my life. I was 2 weeks old when the Orioles won the World Series. I can count on two hands the number of years
they
that really
recently,
felt
right. And yeah. That's the thing that Mueller, and it was so recent that it struck me at this Royals thing. And I guess this is my point to my friend. And this is the thing they really should be thinking about the second time, because this is the thing I'm thinking about where I'm giving my money and my time and my energy at Baltimore Positive to the Orioles, the Ravens, the Terps, Towson, you know, these people that, Preakness, like I've done this for 30 years. There comes a point where like what is relevant and then what is the long tail. Over at UMBC, they have a new building. They won the greatest basketball game ever played. Ask anybody, right? Did they get more fans? Did they sell more tickets? Did they sell what's left of it? What's wrung out of it, other than a good memory and a ball cap or a t-shirt, right?
Right.
And this is where the Orioles, when Mueller and I get together and I shake my head at him about this, and I say, what are you building? What are you building? And I wonder this with the Nationals a little bit. And they had the shooting the other night, and I was supposed to be at that game. I mean, I was completely supposed to. It's the only game I was supposed to go to all year. I told you I was going on Saturday. I did not go. And I look at it and say, aren't the Nationals won? What did they build? Look at the Capitals. The Capitals are a great example. They've had a decade of this incredible prosperity. They rung the bell. They jumped in the fountain. They all got ish-faced. Like, great. All right, now the dude's got silver more than me in a beard, and he's going to go bye-bye, and the coach is long gone, and the ownership, they squeezed it. They sold a lot of tickets, a lot of skybox. They really have. But what's going to be left in the afterburn of that if you haven't created a fan base? And that's really where the Orioles have once again in the long. And I see the Royals a little bit. I mean, I saw the Pirates had prosperity. And nobody goes again. They love a winner. They love a winner, or they love a bobblehead, or whatever it is. I just would like to think that when you're building this stuff, you're thinking a little bit more in terms of we're going to lose again at some point, and we need to keep people around here. Not that you want to be Ishtar every year like the Orioles are right now, where it's not watchable. But Orioles, Royals on this weekend, when I looked at where the Royals were and where the Orioles were, I'm like, it's like they never won at all. I mean, either one of them, to some degree,
right.
Like from where, if you're working there and you got to build it and you got to sell a ticket and you got to find a player and you got to find a sponsor, you can't say, look at what Ned Yost did a couple years. It's over. It's over from that perspective.
Well, and that's, that's the point I was really trying to make in terms of, I mean, you just mentioned it with the Capitals, and I'm not a hockey guy, but clearly they've had a lot of regular season success at the very least over the last 15 years, basically from a couple years after Ovechkin arrived until the present. Now they reached the pinnacle, and yes, there's great memories and there's great short-term value in that specific season and what you get coming out of that. But that's where, I always hear people, you're sitting around at the bar, right, watching a game, and you hear the scenarios as far as someone who really wants to see their team win a championship. Which deal would you do? Would you take a championship, but knowing that over the course of 20 years, they're going to be really lousy for every year but winning that championship? Or would you roll the dice and just say, I don't know? And that's where there is value to what the Ravens have been able to do. And putting the two titles aside, just the fact that they've been in the playoff hunt and in the postseason, over half that time, and just being in contention and having that relevance and hope and being able to sell optimism every single year. There's so much value to that, to be able to do that for a long time. I mean, the Orioles were able to do that for 5 years in a row, and then it completely went away. And
well,
to the
so
point,
much fun being the Ravens fan. People in like Alabama do it. People just decide, I like Lamar. I like Ray. I like Ed Reed. I like the color purple. And I see, you and I have witnessed this on the internet for long stretch. We witnessed this in Europe, right? Like that it's a fun place to play. It's a fun place to be. And I guess the Orioles are Royals or whatever, and it's sad and it's bad and it's all that, but it's like, but it doesn't have to be that way. And I guess that's the point for me.
Right.
Is if it was well run, well owned, well thought about, if the people that were there treated people with dignity at all points, they would be the Oriole Magic Orioles, and they would get a pass if things went a little south for a couple of years. I believe that. And I believe that because I travel around enough to see Reds fans who give the Reds a pass, or
right.
Lions fans who give the Lions, because they love it and because they at least feel like they're in a community partnership. These people have never made it feel that way. Where the Ravens have gone out of their way to make it be a community kind of activity for them.
Well, and you just said it. I mean, you mentioned some. I mean, the Reds clearly look at what the Reds were in the 70s, you know, for example. And of course, they won in 1990 as well. But the Orioles had that grace period for a very long time. I mean, you look at the climate of the mid to late 80s, the Colts had left town. There's so much discussion about, you know, a new stadium. Are the Orioles going to leave too? Are they going to go to the suburbs and closer to DC, and all the talk with Edward Bennett Williams? But you saw how the team was supported then at the very end at Memorial Stadium, and then what they had at Camden Yards. I mean, it was their attendance really didn't start to suffer until they had lost for several years. And I don't need to tell you that.
I'm having Marty Conway on to primarily talk about soccer, because I got to talk about this with him. But like, when I've spent time with him, and you've had breakfast with Larry Lucchino, Charlie Steinberg, but Larry Lee, I've had breakfast with Larry. How hard that was to do. How much effort. It will ask David Cope, ask Baker Koppelman, ask Roy Summerhoff, ask Rick Vaughn when he comes in with Shohei Ohtani. And I mean, the reason I don't bleed all of that to put it out there, I put it out there because it was successful.
Right.
It's what Oriole Magic was. It's what made Baltimore quirky and wonderful. It's what made the Oriole way quirky and wonderful. It's what made Brooks Robinson. It's what's kept Jim Palmer here till this point. It's probably a piece of that Ben McDonald remembers that brings him back, and probably brought Brady Anderson back, because they haven't heard people cheer for them since they left here. They went to places where nobody cared. And it was always different here. And I've now spent a generation here, a whole lifetime, literally a whole adulthood, where nobody's really cared about the baseball team in the way that when I built this thing 30 years ago, I thought they would always care. I thought it was our birthright to care. I thought, how could you F up John Miller, Chuck Thompson, Earl Weaver, mm-hmm. Brooks Robinson, Cal Ripken, Camden Yards, being on 95, having two markets, having your own television network, having the Yankees and Red Sox. How could you F that up?
Yeah.
And it did. And it's still ongoing. And that's the part that really riles me in a Baltimore positive way, because I think, all right, you got some kids down in Bowie. Now, what are you going to do? How are you going to run it? Are you going to invite people like me back, or are we just gone for, are we going to keep it the way it's always been, where like, this is the way you're going to run the place? Are you going to get back in the community and do things, or are you not? Are you going to bring your players out, or are you not? Are you going to hide, or and they're losing now, and they're losing badly. And to your point, it's easy for them to hide, because you don't want to talk about it. I don't want to talk about it. They don't want to hear about it. And it gives them a chance to work in their laboratory without repercussion, because there were no expectations, whatever happens the rest of the way. But at some point we all look up and say, how many years have you been here, and right. When's the winning, and when's the community part of it start? When's the dollar night to come back? When, sure. Do something to get me back to the ballpark the next 8 weeks, please. Something. Anything that isn't full price and you give me a trinket.
Well, and one recent thing they actually did that I will compliment them on in that way is they did that flash sale as far as for, you know, the Trey Mancini home runs, and gave 70% off for I guess one of the Nationals games coming up here. So they need much more of that, very clearly. But you know, just to circle back a little bit, because I wrote about this on Friday at BaltimorePositive.com going into this Royals series. And talked about, you know, the Sunday marked 3 years since the Manny Machado trade. And I kind of gave the update on that. And it's not pretty right now. And part of that was they waited way too long to trade him. We know that. So it is interesting as we're kind of talking about this in terms of franchises and expectations and peaks and valleys and all of that. And it just really does make me think back to And I even engaged with some Orioles fans on Twitter about this. It really makes you think back to what if after Ubaldo Jimenez gives up the home run, Zach Britton's left in the bullpen. What if, as an organization, if you had the proper, if you had a Steve Bisciotti type figure as your owner, the brass sat down at that point and said, look, guys, we just had a really good 5-year run, but here's the deal. Manny Machado has kind of laughed at our extension overtures, all of that, you know, and look, we don't need to make up too many details. We know how it played out. But my point is, if they had moved Machado a year earlier or a year and a half earlier than they did, and they got a much better return, because teams just are not parting with their prospects for a rental. You know, that's why I've said, I don't know how I feel about trading Trey Mancini, because I just don't know what kind of return you're going to get when you consider how valuable he is to this team in this city right now, as far as what he brings in the PR aspect. But I think back to if they had not tried to bleed every last drop out of the 2012 through 2016 club, and they had started the rebuild a year earlier, a year and a half earlier, whatever it would have been. You know, let's say you go into 17 and you sell at the deadline because it was pretty evident at that point they weren't really a contender anymore. What would have happened then? You know, you would have hoped they would have gotten a better return on Zach Britton and Manny Machado. But what does that mean? Does Dan Duquette get a new extension then? Does Buck Showalter hang around? I mean, who knows? And I'm not saying that would be any better, but I guess my point is, and to bring it back what we were talking about with the Royals, is yes, you want to win a championship and you want to reach the pinnacle. And that is such a gratifying moment. And we can all think back to watching, you know, whether it was Maryland in 02, whether it was the Ravens either time, whether it was the Orioles way back in the day, whether we're talking about the Colts and, you know, my grandfather celebrating the 58 team and Alan Ameche and all of that. But, you know, those moments are very fleeting. So what are you getting in between those moments? And that's where what the Ravens have been able to do has been so incredibly valuable and so gratifying and so rewarding as a fan. Look, there's no entitlement here. You're not entitled to your team winning a championship X number of years. It's really tough to do. But I think what you are entitled to have as a fan and expect as a fan is for that team to be competitive more often than not in the long term. And that's what the Ravens have been able to do. And that's what the Orioles have not done since 1983. You know, I'm going to be 38 years old in October. And I've seen, I think it's 10 winning seasons over the course of my life now. Some fan bases in some cities where they've never won anything would say, hey, you did have 96 and you did have 97 and you did have 2014. But other fan bases have had much more consistency over a 4-decade period. And look at the Orioles from 66 through 83, or, you know, let's say 85. I mean, it really speaks to it not just being about championships. I think it's about sustained winning. And again, that doesn't mean you win the title every year or you win the division every single year, but you have a legitimate chance every single year. And that's what the Ravens have been able to do for the better part of 20 years now. And I think beyond the NFL being king kind of conversation, that is a reality in every market in 2021. There's a ton of value to that. And I would even say, even if the Ravens hadn't won in 2000 or 2012, let's say in 2000, you know, the Titans beat them in the divisional round. And let's say in 2012, the Mile High Miracle never happens. We could be talking about the Ravens not having a Super Bowl to their name. However, if you're still looking over the last 20 years, I think you're still seeing a really popular franchise and selling lots of tickets still, and fans very much engaged because they have a chance every year. So my point is, yes, we all dream about those championship moments, and we all have the t-shirts and we all have the hats and we all have the plaques and the ticket stubs and all those different things as far as however much of that you were able to experience. But the journey is still so valuable. And that's where I think, you know, bringing it back to talking about Orioles Royals this past weekend, when you consider where those two teams were 7 years ago, meeting in October at Camden Yards and Kauffman Stadium, and where they are right now. Now, Royals fans can at least say they did get that World Series and another AL pennant. Orioles fans can't even say that much, but neither franchise is particularly relevant right now in Major League Baseball. And, you know, from a long-term standpoint, from an attendance standpoint, from a interest and growth standpoint, you know, how valuable was that World Series for the Royals? It had value. But was it this cash cow that meant they were going to sell out two decades in a row? Well, no, it wasn't.
We're watching them play Tampa this week, and they're you know, I mean, there goes your proof, right?
Like, yeah, well,
they won and never had anything. That's possible too. It's possible to win and not have anybody notice.
Well, and that's where, to me, as much as we can talk about various franchises, and I know Manfred was talking about Oakland and the future there and the stadium, which, I mean, my goodness, I've been hearing about the A's potentially moving since, what, the mid-90s, the post-La Russa era. That's been talked about at least to some degree. But I think that's where you do look at Tampa Bay and, you know, that whatever you want to call that, it's not even a ballpark in St. Petersburg, where it's not very easily accessible to what is, you know, a pretty nice size market, but it's really difficult to get to. And that's, you look at that example and you say, wow, everything I just laid out in terms of being competitive, the Rays, for the better part of now going on close to 15 years, they've been that. Now, they haven't been great every single year, and they haven't made the playoffs every single year, and they've been to two World Series, but they haven't won a World Series championship. But they've been that relevant team that you've talked about. But that's where you do look at that market and you look at where that stadium is and you say, that should be working in terms of fan interest. And it's not. So I don't think, and that's where I think you do listen to questions as far as the long-term viability of the Rays being in that market without a ballpark located somewhere else there. So, you know, that's the exception to the rule. But I think by and large, that model in terms of being good for a long period of time, even if you haven't won a title, there's still so much value to that. And that's where I would say, again, that journey is still valuable and that journey's fun. And even if you don't win the championship, that's still something you can invest in for 6 months every year and talk about in the off season every year. And that's talking about a team that hasn't held on to many of their players, but they're well run. They've been that well-oiled machine with their farm system and their international market. And frankly, that's what the Orioles are striving to be. Now, you hope if and when the Orioles get to that level, they have a much greater financial commitment from ownership to hold on to some of those players. Not that you're going to hold on to everybody, but that's what Mike Elias and Sig Meidel are striving for right now. I think they are really trying to look at that Rays model as much as they can from a development standpoint. The question is, once that time comes, these guys get to the majors and, hey, it's good. Are you able to sustain that? Kansas City was not able to. The Orioles, you know, they were kind of built for a window the way they were run because they didn't use the international market or draft all that terribly well other than a couple years. So we'll see how it plays out. But it definitely was interesting. You know, and hey, it was a series win. Nice to see. Great. Matt Harvey had his best start in over 2 months on Sunday. Good for him. But we know in the long term, what you saw over the weekend, not terribly consequential whatsoever. And a reminder of how fleeting that success can be if you're not a well-run organization.
He is Luke Jones. He is Baltimore Luke and Luke at WNST.net. All right. So you were at Wildwood and things have happened. Sometimes you're astonished by my wrestling, like old schoolness, right? Like I pull out stuff that even you don't know about from wrestling, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, if everyone who's watching us right now, my Chris Jericho shirt. So show it's good. We're talking a little pro wrestling, but yeah, Mr. Wonderful. You have to remember, I was born in 1983. I grew up in rock and wrestling and WWF becoming this global brand. I mean, the territory system was something that I've only read about, you know, because of how drastically it changed in the mid 80s. So like most kids, yeah, Hulk Hogan was my favorite, you know, big shock there. But I loved Mr. Wonderful. In fact, I remember when Mr. Wonderful turned on him and I remember them having the steel cage match and both of them, their feet hitting the floor at the same time and they restart the match and everything. So I was bummed about that. I mean, Mr. Wonderful, Paul Orndorff was, you know, on my list of top 10, top 15 favorite wrestlers, he would be there. I don't know how high, but he would be there. And he was definitely one of my favorites back in the 80s. So yeah, well, I know you spoke about him though, so I'll give you some oxygen.
Well, no,
there.
I mean, what happened was he died, and I was literally on the phone with Chris Pica. We're working, and I said to Pica, I said, "Man, I know I saw Paul Orndorff on this card when," and I've told you about my Aunt Edna driving from Abbeville over to Greenwood, and I saw wrestling matches when I was a boy. And Pike is like, what year was it? I got a newspapers.com thing. Was there an ad in the paper? I'm like, there absolutely was an ad in the paper. It was old school. It's where I saw the matches were going to be. It's what got me so excited because, dude, it's Abbeville, South Carolina. Google it. I mean, you know what I mean? There's not a whole lot going on in the summer. And my mom was from there and it was home to my mom. I was 11 years old or whatever. So I said to Pike, I'm like, it wasn't 78. It was either 79 or 80. And it was in the summer. It was like in July probably. And it was NWA wrestling. And I'm telling you, the whole card was full of stars. And I've got a story even further. And this is my memory of it. And I think if I got the results, maybe I could find this. And I'm going to pull it up because Chris Pike found it. I never thought I would see this again, Luke. So it's one of those things when you get to be my age and you see something that you haven't seen. I literally clipped this out and I had this in my possession for years when, you know, Kevin Eck and our friendship and our wrestling friendship in the 80s, I kept that. I was a pack rat when I was a kid, you know, mm-hmm. I kept this into my 20s. Probably. I probably had it 30 years ago and it got thrown away when I threw away things before you could scan things or whatever. But this is the legitimate, swear to God, found in the Greenwood newspaper in the Greenwood Piedmont. And Pike clipped it and he found it in 30 seconds, dude. He's wow. A genius, right? So I remembered, and you got to look at this card, that Paul Orndorff was in a tag team match with Jimmy Snuka. Mm-hmm. No one had ever heard of Jimmy Snuka, right? Swede Hansen and Sergeant Goulet. Sergeant Goulet was Rene Goulet. Big John Studd, Blackjack Mulligan, Tony Atlas, and Paul Jones. I had to Google Paul Jones to see what ever happened to Paul Jones because he was a star back in the day. Don Kernoodle was also a, you know, sort of a preliminary bum. But as I remember it, somebody didn't show up. It might have been Blackjack Mulligan. Somebody didn't show up. Man, Mulligan was there. Baron Von Roschke showed up on this card.
Okay.
And I looked to see if he toured NWA, and sure enough, in the summer of 79, he was wrestling NWA. And I, because he was like my favorite wrestler, but he wasn't in the WWF right then. He had mm-hmm. left, right? After the Claw, and he had his feud with Bruno and all that. And I had always wanted to see him. He was always in the wrestling books, but I had never seen him. And he was there that night. So my memory would have told me that Ricky Steamboat was on that card. Like, it really would have told me that. And I told Chris that, but he wasn't. And this was the real card. And to be able to find that 40 years later on the day that Paul Orndorff died, I don't know. It brought me some weird satisfaction in some way, like talking to you about it right now and remembering this little minor league ballpark behind a Chick-fil-A, behind a mall in Greenwood, and my crazy Aunt Edna flashing her high beams on this little road, gassing up the car. I mean, she was 80 years old. It made me find her tombstone online. It made me find her obituary. Like, I found all of this stuff because of a wrestling match she took me to on the day that Paul Orndorff died, right? So it's crazy how things like that work.
That's fun. And I mean, whether it's a newspaper clipping or a ticket stub, I mean, I know you have a big collection there. That's why I as much as I love technology, and that's why I do get a little sad when, you know, you don't have hard tickets handed out anymore for games and things of that nature. Because those relics that you come across, I mean, in fact, you know, when I moved into my house, 4 years ago now at this point, you know, going through so many things my mom had saved and I had saved, I found a one, you know, it was the sheet with the card for WWF. I think it was at the Civic Center. It might have been at the Capitol Center, actually. But, you know, you see that, and I could almost guarantee you Paul Orndorff was on that, probably wrestling Hulk Hogan at that point in time in the mid 80s. So it's fun. And it's, you know, it's a nod to yesteryear. And you kind of think, I mean, just what you said. I mean, you think about the territory system in wrestling, and now it's all WWE and AEW trying to get a little bit of that market. And they've done a nice job for themselves, and you know, your Ring of Honors and your MCWs here locally. But you know, it was a different time back then. And you know, Paul Orndorff was one of those guys who, you know, clearly took part in the territory system, but he also had a successful transition to when WWF became this, you know, national brand and now the global brand that it is today. And you know, he's someone who He was in the main event of the first WrestleMania. So there you go. I mean, teaming with Roddy Piper against Mr. T and Hulk Hogan. So was definitely, sad to see that. But I do know Paul Orndorff had really battled some health issues these last few years. I think I want to say battled cancer and some other ailments that I know those close to him had basically kind of viewed it as, he's at peace now. He's not suffering anymore. I know he had made a few public appearances here and there the last 5 years, but unfortunately, as is the case with so many guys, even the old pro wrestlers who make it to their 70s and 80s, it's not an easy life from a physical standpoint. I think we all know that.
Luke Jones is here. We're talking a little wrestling in the aftermath of the life of Paul Orndorff. And I went to look at that card to see who was alive and who was dead. Tony Atlas is alive.
Yeah.
I did realize that. And I looked at all the rest of it and I thought, the hero worship of me and my Aunt Edna going that night and the $250 that Blackjack Mulligan got that night for, like literally. Mm-hmm. And I saw the ringside tickets were $5. And I totally remember my Aunt Edna saying, "We're sitting ringside. I ain't driving all the way over to Greenwood, honey. We're going to sit ringside, honey." Because the life of Paul Orndorff is at least giving me a great, great memory of my Aunt Edna, her fried chicken and fudge, driving over from Greenwood, South Carolina, back in the late 1970s. So thank you, Chris Pica, Blog and Tackle. Shout out to my man, Bruce Posner, here this week, too, because I had I was a little late getting his broadcast going on Monday morning. I'm going to grab Bruce, bring him in here, do a little terp talk here before football season gets going as well. Shout out to our friends at Royal Farms. It's Chicken Palooza month. I know I'm crab cake palooza-ing in August, but we'll certainly be working out some Royal Farm stops. They're going to be gassing me up, probably Western frying me up before it's all over, probably watering me up all over the state. You can get adult beverages at the Royal Farms on Eastern Shore. You aware of that, Luke?
That's a game changer right there.
It is a game changer. I actually, there's a Royal Farms in Parkville that has, I went in, I'm like, really?
It's nice.
It's nice in there. Well, Luke lives in Pennsylvania. They have relaxed laws up there, you can find us all week long. Don and I are going to be talking about all sorts of things this week. We were scheduled to have Johnny O at Costas on Monday, and Costas had a massive electrical issue over the weekend. So give my thoughts to Pete and Nick. They're back up and running. They got crabs for you. But if you were around Saturday night into Sunday, anywhere on my side of town, the storms were just horrific. So we are going to be punting on Johnny O and on Brandon Scott at Coco's. Going to be doing them into September after I get back from, but I'm not punting on the tour. I got 30 crab cakes in 30 days in me. I am discovering places in Solomon's Island and Tillman Island and Oxford Ferries. My dear friend Anita McCool is going to be taking me over to Smith Island for a real crab cake hunt. So it's going to be an interesting August as I tour the state we call home, the free state. The crab cake tour is soon. We are WNST AM 1570, WNST Towson, Baltimore AM 1570, and we never stop talking Baltimore positive.